It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
One down, 10 to go. A conspiracy turns to truth. 2, it's Donald Trump against Ron DeSantis. But what if you can't have Trump? Will Trump voters vote for DeSantis? What if you can't have DeSantis? Will DeSantis voters vote for Trump? 3, you have decided. We've heard from the people. Would you rather your son be a Major League Baseball All-Star or a top-tier golfer in the PGA? It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? And welcome to Monday. At this point in the podcast, I always say, I hope you will download, rate, and review the podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment. And I ask you if you would be so kind to leave me a comment or a 5-star review. Here's why it matters. These algorithms, man. Whether or not it's at Fox News Podcast, whether or not it's at Spotify, or whether or not it's at Apple. The more engagement you have on your channel, the more they help you find discovery, find new listeners. I know how many tens of thousands of people listen to the Will Cain Podcast, and I know that if we all, and I'm asking kindly, if we all left a review, left a comment, smashed down on 4 or 5 stars, whatever you think is worthy, then it would help us in finding new members in this community in pursuit of the truth. I do truly think what we have here is unique. And I think that the more people that can join our community, the better in our pursuit for the truth. I was getting some truth this weekend in the barber chair. I went and visited my guy Sharky up in New York City. And let me tell you, he had some things to say. He shared with me, and I quote, his plan to end wars and maybe even crime. Of course, I laughed and I'm intrigued and I said, absolutely, I want to hear how you plan to end war and maybe even crime. Such a beautiful turn of phrase. What a wonderful use of his heavily Chinese accented English language. I have a plan that can cure cancer and maybe even headaches. Perfect. He has a plan to stop war and maybe even crime. And his plan goes something like this. Most of the weapons in the world, explains Sharky, are made in about 10 different countries. And so if the 10 weapon manufacturing countries in the world would come together, I know, hear me out. If those 10 countries would come together and say, no more, no one else gets weapons, just we get weapons, and we together will police the world. And if you break the rules and go get weapons, then we will, direct quote, smack you down. Now, Sharky had a lot of things to say this weekend. And I mean, I got to tell you, I had to excuse myself from the barber chair. He was explaining to me how he gives people feedback on their hair, that he was telling a 16-year-old that her hair looked hot. And her mom said, was sitting there and he said, oh, I mean, pretty. And his mom said, no, you should say if she looks hot. And then he goes on to tell me how he's telling an opera singer that she needs a more active sex life. I'm like, Sharky. No, man, Sharky. And then this beautiful couple comes in with 2 children. And I'm like, Sharky, he goes, what, bro? And I kind of glance around. I'm like, let's reel it in, man. He's like, stay in your lane, bro. There's no commercial breaks here. And he kept going. And he wanted to tell me a story about a client that he had that's trans. And he said he was going to make her hair pretty. But then he realized she's a dude now. And so he's going to make it strong. And then he's telling me a story about a client that came in with, you remember the famous pink hats, you know, that women wore to the Women's March in Washington, D.C. You remember the name of the hats, you know, vulgar term hat. And he's not editing himself the way I'm editing myself. And I'm like, Sharky, enough. He's like, no commercial breaks, bro. Stay in your lane. And it was too much and it took too long. So finally he landed the plane. And I said, this sounds like a lot of a nuclear non-proliferation treaty. You know, like everybody that's got nukes is saying to those that can't have nukes, you can't have nukes. And he's like, exactly. And I'm like, yeah, but man, I think you're running up against 2 things. The inevitable march of progress in technology and human nature. I may not have said it just like that. But you don't get to roll back the ability of people to discover, to innovate. What we are looking at today in terms of weaponry is going to look like rock chunking in about, 10, 15 years. And that cat of 3D guns and low-grade nuclear weapons and, who knows, laser beams is not going to be a cat that you can keep in the bag. It's not a horse you can keep in the barn. And that's because of human nature. There's no 10 countries that are going to get together in the world and decide that everybody's better off if we just share the responsibility of world peace. There are good guys and there are bad guys in the world. That is human nature. And the only way to control it is peace through strength. But still, it's always good to hear the opinions of Sharky. Story number one. One down, 10 to go. A conspiracy turns to truth. The U.S. Department of Energy has joined the FBI in determining that the best available intelligence suggests that the origins of COVID-19 are not from a wet market and a pangolin in Wuhan, but rather from the lab at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. The U.S. Department of Energy, the latest intelligence apparatus to arrive at what is a commonsensical and logical truth. They give it, though, a low grade of confidence that COVID came from a lab. This is now at the same time that the New York Times has published two new studies, non-peer-reviewed studies, that are doubling down on the idea that COVID came from the wet market. It is astounding to take this moment in history where at the very least, we have crossed the threshold from certainty into uncertainty, where we have crossed the threshold from confidence into humility, where we have actually arrived at a place where there can be an honest pursuit of the truth. What I mean by that is this. Let's take a quick look back at the way this idea that COVID originated from a lab was treated some 3 years ago. A little less than 3 years ago, media enterprises like the New York Times and the Washington Post published headlines like the following. Senator Tom Cotton repeats fringe theory of COVID origins. Whenever the idea of the Wuhan Institute of Virology was discussed, it was always accompanied by one of the following words: debunked, fringe, conspiracy. This despite the fact that, as Michael Schellenberger, a frequent guest here on the Will Cain podcast and one of the recipients of the Twitter files from Elon Musk, has pointed out, that for years there has been warnings about lab leaks leading to a global pandemic. I think I told you about a podcast I listened to some years ago called The End of the World, and it went through several existential threats to humanity, threats that actually represented danger to our existence. It talked about the likelihood of asteroid meteorite hits. It talked about the sun flaming out. It talked about climate change and global warming. It goes through all of these potentialities, including aliens landing on Earth, in a very, very rational way, quantifying the level of risk. For what it's worth, this podcast, spending an episode on each, said climate change is not, even if it is real, an existential threat by any definition to humanity. If there are aliens among us, it adopts something called the Fermi paradox, who was a scientist, I believe, in New Mexico during the Manhattan Project, who during lunch encounters with his fellow scientists would ask the question, if there are aliens, where are they? Meaning they would be advanced civilizations surely already walking amongst us. And maybe they are, but they've chosen not to reveal themselves. It's a really good podcast to walk through all the potential threats to humanity. But one of those threats it literally spends an episode on is pandemic. And I'm telling you, this podcast series was published well before 2020. I think it was published in something like 2016. And it literally says a bioengineered flu-like strain given lethality and contagion, because those usually work inverse. The more contagious a virus is, the less lethal it is, because if a virus kills you, it can't pass along to a new host. So what you get is this combination usually of low lethality, high virality, or the inverse, really deadly, but not very contagious. But taking something like the Spanish flu and souping it up through, and it talked about at the time, a phenomenon called gain-of-function research, you create a superbug. And in this podcast, it says, and that superbug comes out of, leaks from, not just a lab, but a Chinese lab. Why? Because the entire scientific community knew that Chinese labs conducting gain-of-function research was already highly controversial. There was already a huge debate within the scientific community about whether or not we should be conducting gain-of-function research, because they knew the potential for danger. And in walking through this, and he didn't, the host of this podcast, come up with all this on his own, people had been warning about the lack of safety protocols at Chinese labs. He ran through the scenario that this superbug leaks out of a Chinese lab. And yet, despite the fact that had been openly worried about, discussed, and considered in the scientific community, the minute we have a global pandemic from Wuhan, China, the idea that it would have come from a lab is dismissed as conspiracy. In fact, a whole host of scientists publishing in the Lancet scientific journal said, "We stand together to strongly condemn the conspiracy that COVID-19 does not have a natural origin." They were absolutely certain. And the puppets in the media, like the Washington Post and the New York Times, fully bought off by either or both, Big Pharma and China, parroted that certainty. PolitiFact, which is in and of itself a joke. PolitiFact wrote the following headline about a segment on Tucker Carlson Tonight. Debunked conspiracy theory that COVID-19 was created in a lab airs on Tucker Carlson. Just review those words for a moment. Debunked conspiracy theory. Hey, speaking of bought off, did you guys see Saturday Night Live and Woody Harrelson on Saturday Night Live? Ooh, he went there. Woody Harrelson was talking about doing a joke saying he had gotten a movie script and he was threw it away because it was too unbelievable, but the movie script was, all the biggest drug cartels in the world conspired together to buy up all the media and convince everyone to stay inside and lock down until everyone would take the drug cartel's drugs, not once, but over and over, and then they could reemerge back into society. Boy, that wasn't received well among the parrots. You know, it doesn't take very much research to see how much Big Pharma's advertising budget is and how much of it is devoted to mainstream media. It doesn't take very much research to look into China, and for that matter, all corporate businesses doing business in China, which by extension means you are doing business with the Chinese Communist Party, is beholden to China. And these are the people that walked forward with so much certainty in the spring of 2020. Not low-grade confidence, not humility, not uncertainty. They said definitively natural origins. They called the lab leak theory debunked conspiracies. Now, where do we arrive at today? Today we sit here, and the New York Times has published two new articles by two scientists, as I mentioned, not peer-reviewed, doubling down on the idea that COVID came from the wet market. They look at two different evolutions of the strain, tie it back to the wet market. Okay, look, that still to me defies common sense. In making an argument, you're skiing uphill. Let's see how well you climb. Okay, but I am at least intellectually honest enough to say, until there's 100% certainty, even if my common sense and logic all lead to one direction, then I will avoid 100% certainty. I'm probably about 95. But still, I'll leave the window open for that 5%. I just did a Joe Biden whisper. I will not be 100% confident in the lab theory. Why, scientists, why, media, were you 100% certain that the lab leak at that time was a conspiracy? Don't give me any crap about the facts changing and therefore then the story changes. It's utter barn fuel. So why were you so certain? Is it because Donald Trump was on the other side? Because he was suggesting that COVID came from a lab? So you, the unthinking reactionary, nothing but a knee that jerks, had to take the opposite approach? It was a pangolin. Why were you so certain? Or was it because you were bought and paid for? Because you're not journalists. You're not truth seekers. Because, in fact, you are liars. That's what I think the vast majority of media is. I don't have the same good graces and goodwill, for example, as my friend Steve Krakauer from our podcast last week. It's too blunt. It's too obvious. It's too sloppy. It's too dumb. And most of media, while dumb, isn't that dumb. So they're liars. And, you know, right now in South Carolina, there's the trial going on for Alex Murdaugh, allegedly murdering his wife and his son. It's already been established, and Murdaugh's admitted, that he lied to the police when they arrived at the scene. He said, "I wasn't even near the dog kennels where the murders took place. I was off at the home, at my home, resting. You know, I hadn't seen him in 45 minutes. Oh, and then there was a Snapchat video that came out from his son before he died, showing that Murdaugh was there like 3 minutes before the murders. Okay, hard to overcome. So Murdaugh admits, okay, I didn't tell the truth on that, but I told the truth on everything else. I believe there is a jury instruction in murder trials that if a witness has lied about one thing, you are free to presume he has lied about others. Also, human nature. Once you are a proven liar, your dam has a hole in it. You don't get to, from that point forward, puff your chest out, peacock your feathers and say, but I'm the media in search of the truth. No, no. You are liars. And the public knows it. I mentioned Schellenberger. He had a good tweet thread on this. He said, that's why trust in news media is down to 26%. My response to that is, who's the quarter of Americans who still has trust in the media? That is one conspiracy that we at least know now wasn't a conspiracy. And I am fairly confident that in due time we'll reveal was a truth. 10, 12, 20 more to go.
We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today.
Story number two. A brand new Fox News poll out just Sunday says the following, that a 2024 Republican primary would show the following preferences among Republican primary voters. 43% choose as their nominee former President Donald Trump. 28% choose as their nominee Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Coming in at 7%, both Nikki Haley and Mike Pence. Coming in at 2%, Greg Abbott and Liz Cheney. No poll numbers were not statistically significant enough for another friend of the Will Came podcast, Vivek Ramaswamy. Vivek, the biotech entrepreneur who's written a book on Woke Inc., corporate wokeness, has announced he is seeking to run for president. Vivek has some interesting opinions that we've shared here on the Will Came podcast, including, hey, Mexico, get the drug cartels under control, or we, the United States of America, will control it for you, Mexico. But what I found fascinating about this poll among Republican primary voters was whether or not Trump voters would support DeSantis and whether or not DeSantis voters would support Trump. Those two are already being pitted against one another. They are the clear front runners for the Republican Party. And Donald Trump has already begun his attacks on Ron DeSantis. To this point, the Florida governor has largely ignored Donald Trump. Ron DeSantis, for as great as he has been, and he has been absolutely astounding as the governor of Florida, really has to prove to the Republican voters, and for that matter, the American voter, or make his case as to what he would do with the primary job of the president of the United States. The presidency of the United States is not really a domestic policy job, no matter what was attempted by, for example, Barack Obama. George W. Bush wanted to be the education president. But the presidency is about leadership, responding to circumstances unforeseen, 9/11 and George W. Bush, and foreign policy, where most of the powers of the executive lie. And it is still to be determined. What is Ron DeSantis's philosophy for the role of the United States on the world stage? Does he follow the lead of, for example, President Donald Trump in establishing an America first foreign policy? It's not fair, and I don't think it's accurate at all to suggest that Donald Trump's approach was isolationist. It was not isolationist. It was engagement, but it wasn't also one among equals. It wasn't diplomacy before strength. It was asking at every turn, how does this serve America first? Ron DeSantis, when he was in Congress and Barack Obama was president, was in favor of arming Ukrainians against Russian advances in Crimea in, what was it, roughly 2014. Ron DeSantis seems to be a bit more skeptical towards Ukraine today. That is a big question yet to be answered for Ron DeSantis. I think it's pretty clear where the other nominees are. They're all pretty neocon. Nikki Haley, Mike Pence, Mike Pompeo. But I still find it fascinating because those two have been pitted against one another and Trump has already begun the attacks. What do Trump voters think of DeSantis? And what do DeSantis voters think of Trump? There's an attempt in some corners of the right to paint DeSantis as establishment. I don't see the case for that whatsoever. So has already animosity been bred? Well, here's what the second choice would be for Trump primary voters, according to this new Fox News poll. 42% of Trump voters, if not choosing Trump, would turn to Ron DeSantis. 23%, big statistical jump, by the way, from the overall vote, would go to Mike Pence. That makes some sense. Of course, Pence was Trump's vice president. But what that says to me is there's not so much animosity yet, between Trump and DeSantis that Trump voters wouldn't, or a good statistical percentage of them, wouldn't, if given no other choice, turn to DeSantis. What about the reverse? What if DeSantis voters didn't get DeSantis? Where would they go? 34% of DeSantis voters would go to Donald Trump. 27% would go to Nikki Haley. 10% would go to Mike Pence. There's a lot left to discover when it comes to the race to be the Republican nominee for president. Like I just mentioned, foreign policy. DeSantis still has to see how he survives the spotlight. DeSantis still has to see how he survives the withering attacks that chop down one candidate after another of Donald Trump. You remember, what was it? Lion Ted Cruz, Little Marco, Low Energy Jeb. How will DeSantis weather that storm? And then for Haley, Pence, Pompeo, the strategy seems to be one of two. Use the nomination process as a way to elevate your stature. But to what? Pence has already been vice president. Haley's held every office there is to hold in government. Or hang around the hoop. See what blows up. See if you can't grab a rebound. Put back a dunk. It's always a smart philosophy in life. Let the others take themselves out. Hang around the hoop. I don't see it, though. I think it's going to be, clearly, either DeSantis or Trump.
We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
Story number three. Would you rather your son be a Major League Baseball All-Star or a top-tier golfer in the PGA? I heard from you. I put that to you in last episode of the Will Came podcast. I then went to Instagram and to Twitter and conducted a poll. And I also gave out my email and heard from many of you as to what is your choice. The results are as follows. Roughly 52% of the listeners and followers of the Will Came podcast chose Major League Baseball All-Star. Tight race. Reflecting what I think I felt in the beginning. This is an interesting debate. 48% picking PGA Tour golfer. A lot of you sent in some good emails. You told me about Full Swing, the Netflix documentary, a little bit like the F1 docuseries that's now going on about golf, saying, watch that and you'll want to be Jordan Spieth. I did, by the way, watch the first two episodes. Here's what I find fascinating about these docuseries. You get to see who the human being is. And it was interesting. In episode two, it was Brooks Koepka, who's, you know, kind of a, from a distance, a dude, a guy's guy, you know, and then Scottie Scheffler, who's kind of quiet and reserved. Man, you come away from, I came away from that. I'm a Scottie Scheffler guy. I know he's a Horn, Texas Longhorn, Dallas guy, but that's not really why. I just liked the dude. Well, simple with his wife, focused on God. I don't know. I come away from that. I'm like, this is a valuable exercise in learning who these human beings are. So more than Kepka, I think I'm a guy. I'm a Scottie Scheffler guy. But I found this email among all the dudes who emailed me. I found this email the most interesting. This is from Sharon. I'm going to read this to you. Hey, Will, I've never responded to any of your podcasts before, so this is a first. I watch you on Fox and Friends on the weekend and listen to your podcast. I have a great deal of respect for your opinions and views. Thank you, Sharon. After listening to today's podcast, I just felt like I had to respond as to which is cooler, an all-star Major League Baseball player or a top-tier PGA golfer. I was an avid baseball fan back in the 70s and 80s. I loved it. Both of my sons loved it. Both played in-house rec and travel baseball from first grade on up. Both were on JV and varsity in high school and played American Legion teams after that. Even now, my older son had training in his umpiring both high school and college games, and my younger son plays evenings on a men's softball team. Guess I've always been a baseball mom. But wait, here's the twist. Sharon says, however, around 2009, I started to become interested in PGA golf. Since then, I can't get enough. I try to get to as many tournaments as possible. I've been to various tournaments around D.C., plus the 2016 U.S. Open in Pittsburgh, the PGA Championship in 2017 at Quail Hollow, the Players in 2019, the PGA Championship at Kiawa Island in 21, and the 21 BMW in Caves Valley. Now I think the analysis gets interesting. Sharon says, baseball has changed in the last 25 years. Too much money, too corporate. It's just not the same. Professional golf has changed as well, and we can thank Tiger for that. It's exciting. It's fun. When I've gone to tournaments, there are thousands of people in attendance. It was a cool experience at Kiawa, watching throngs of people follow Phil as he walked to the 18th green on Sunday. If you ever see any videos, you see it in full swing. The Phoenix Waste Management Open that just happened. I mean, it's a huge party. For some of my friends that think golf is so stuffy and elite, you got to see the Waste Management Open in Phoenix. That was my editorial back to Sharon's. And it was the coolest thing ever to be at Quail Hollow on that Sunday in 2017 and watch Justin Thomas walk up the fairway on the 18th and hearing everyone chant JT and Roll Tide. Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, Scottie Scheffler, Rory, and others, these guys are cool. Jordan is definitely cooler than Bryce Harper. If you'd asked me in the 90s, I would have definitely said baseball. But today, I would say that it would be cooler for my son to be a top-tier PGA player, and both my sons now play golf. Thanks for reading, Will. I'll be tuning in tomorrow for Fox and Friends. I kind of think Sharon's story is more common than my buddies might realize, or the 52% of you that pick baseball. I do feel like there's been a shift, and it's probably happened over that time frame. Probably starting with the end of the steroid era, sort of like the last big bomb. Now, don't get me wrong. I was there in 2010, 2011, when the Rangers were one strike away from winning the World Series, went to two consecutive World Series and lost. And I'm up to date on Rangers prospects and the new reformed pitching staff under Andrew Haney and Jacob deGrom, Jake Odorizzi. I'm all over it, man. But I think we all have to recognize something has changed with baseball. Want to know how many people are playing baseball today? Found this poll pretty fascinating. These are team and racket sport participation. So golf's not in this. Team and racket sport participation in the U.S. Number one sport for participation, basketball, 28 million. Number two, tennis, 23.6 million. Number three, baseball, 15.5 million. Soccer comes in at 13 million. And this is what I found fascinating. Coming in fifth with a bullet over the last 2 years, pickleball, 8.9 million. I got to say, I was an early adopter. Started playing pickleball about 3 or 4 years ago every summer. It now beats volleyball, football, and softball in participation. Hey, to round out our conversation today about sports, let me say this. It's almost March, which means I've, post-NBA trade deadline, re-engaged with basketball. We have conference tournaments coming up in college basketball, followed by March Madness. Back in the days of the Will Cain Show, we had so much fun having eating challenges. I don't know what we can do, but March Madness is awesome. We got to figure out a way to have fun with it. The University of Texas is pretty good and survived the firing of Chris Beard, who, by the way, has had all his charges dropped. We talked about that. All the charges are dropped, yet he's still fired as the head coach of the Texas Longhorns. And I watched the Mavericks choke up a 27-point lead to the Lakers on Sunday. I love the trade for Kyrie, but this is the biggest gut punch of a loss in basketball. To just watch a glacier melt over three quarters, to dominate, and then to give it all back. I think they're 1-4 since Kyrie and Luke have been starting to play together. Here's what you know for the NBA. In my estimation, four teams. Tune in during the Western and Eastern Conference Finals. I'm just saying that. I'll be tuned in much earlier. I'll be with the Mavs every step of the way. But it is going to be Nuggets Suns and Bucks Celtics. Those four teams are head and shoulders. Sorry, Grizzlies. Sorry, Kings. Sorry, Sixers. Those four teams are deep and well-built. That Bucks-Suns game was awesome, and it didn't even include Giannis and KD. Nuggets and Suns, Bucks and Celtics. See you at the conference finals. That's it for me today. I'll see you again next time on the Will Cain Podcast. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts and Amazon Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.